Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Layla Motley is living the young novelist dream. Her debut novel, Nightcrawling, has picked up sterling reviews and was selected for the Oprah Book Club. The buzz has landed the book on the New York Times bestseller list, and Motley just turned 20. At the same time, Oakland, the city she grew up in, where she was the youth poet laureate, has undergone wrenching change that's especially impacted the young Black people who are at the center of the novel. We'll talk with Motley about her soaring success, the real-life events that inspired the book, and the responsibilities she feels to represent the town. That's coming up next, after this news. This is Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Layla Motley has been on a superstar trajectory, absorbing Oakland's revolutionary history and speaking it anew in her poetry and in her appearances all around the Bay. Last time she was on this show, she told us, "I think the poet has a constantly evolving role. History, memory, story, continual vulnerability." Now she's taken on a new genre. Her debut novel, Nightcrawling, is an unflinching portrait of a young Black woman who's sexually exploited by the very people who are sworn, theoretically, to protect her. She's a girl who reaches for joy and provides care for her loved ones, even when the very worst of our society has been visited upon her. It's a great and difficult book. I ended up reading it just in one sitting, unable to stop reading from the first sentence until the very last. And we're absolutely delighted to welcome Layla Motley back. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to play a little clip for you. You've heard it, of course. This is Oprah.
Y'all know there isn't anything I enjoy more than helping readers discover new talent. And our next book club pick is a star. She wrote this book when she was just 17. By the time she'd already been named Youth Poet Laureate of Oakland, California, 17. And I'm thrilled to announce that her debut novel is now an Oprah's Book Club selection. And it is Nightcrawling by Layla Motley.
I mean, what is this even like right now? The star of stars, Oprah Winfrey, is calling you a star.
I cannot fathom it. I think that's something that is difficult to ever really grasp, but definitely it was one of the most shocking days of my life when Ms. Winfrey popped up on my Zoom screen.
I mean, does this level of celebrity scare you? Like, do you feel fried by it, or is it invigorating? Or you, how do you feel about it?
I mean, I've tried to stay off the internet as much as possible since the book
Smart.
Came out. So I'm really only experiencing my in-person life, which is also very different from how it normally is. It's definitely a hard thing to grasp, but it's also, you know, every writer's dream to have their work read widely. And I think this story is so important. So I kind of try to just handle it and remember to come back to this book and why I wrote it in the first place.
Yeah. Well, why did you write it?
I wrote it because I wanted to tell a story of teenage Black girls and give the kind of agency and beauty and trust and lack of judgment to this character, Kiara, that I think we don't often give teenagers and particularly teenage Black girls. And I wanted to tell a story that allows teenage Black girls to acknowledge our own vulnerability and to question the ways in which the world has asked us and told us we are supposed to behave.
Have you been hearing from other young Black women and Black girls who have read this book, even if you're trying to kind of stay away from like the broad celebrity?
Yes.
You heard from people who've been touched by it in the way that you want to touch people?
Yeah, I have. It's unbelievable. It really just affirms the reason I wrote this book. I think that getting to see yourself reflected back in a book and see parts of you that this world really does try to push away, given to you in a story that doesn't judge but validates, I think it's so important. It's a kind of book that I wished that I had had when I was 15, and so I wrote it.
Let's talk a little bit about your Oakland. I mean, I was listening back on your, you know, last appearance here a few years ago, mm-hmm. and also just, you know, I'm familiar with your work, and you've really kept delving into Oakland's revolutionary history, mm-hmm. and the way that people in Oakland have kind of advanced thought across the country and the world. Where do you go, though, to kind of touch and taste that history in the city?
I mean, I think it's all around us. We have this kind of revolutionary tradition that has continued on. There are so many organizers and organizations in this city that are doing incredible work. I mean, the Anti-Police Terror Project is one of them. There are so many organizations and really just people who continue to bring forward this spirit of rebellion that I think is so important, particularly when rebellion requires us to step into fear and into the unknown.
Mm-hmm. There's also, you know, this pretty incredible arts history too, you know, thinking about the pretty revolutionary lesbian poet Pat Parker and mm-hmm. many other writers. There's also a lot of these kind of youth organizations that, you know, thinking back to my early days as a writer, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine having, you know, your youth radio, your Chapter 510, mm-hmm. your Youth Speaks, all this whole infrastructure to kind of support your creativity. How did that help, or what role do you think that those kind of orgs played in your development?
Absolutely. I mean, I think just having places where creativity is encouraged and practicality isn't the main focus. I think often young people are told that in order for us to survive, we have to let go of our dreams.
Learn to code.
Yeah, exactly. and I mean, I think there's a place for that, but there's also always a place for creativity and liberation and following our words and our stories. And I think that organizations like Youth Radio, like Youth Speaks, have really been able to allow spaces to exist for that to happen and not, you know, close the door before it's even been opened for young people.
Yeah. You know, basically, ever since you were born, really 20 years before that, the percentage of the people of Oakland who are Black has been declining. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you think that shaped you, you know, relative to your parents' generation mm-hmm. or people who experienced, you know, some of Oakland's different historical periods?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm one of the last generations to really remember what it looked like before we experienced this huge influx of wealth. So I definitely remember places and things and people that existed in this city before 2012 and the mass housing boom, and just seeing, you know, so many of the people that I loved have to move out. The mass displacement is absolutely insane, and it requires us to think about and engage with what does it mean to put Black people out of our homes, and particularly in a story that is historically Black, in a city that's historically Black. I think it's really important for us to also engage with the narratives around Oakland and how they've changed over the past 10 years from being only about a city that we think of as violent or crime-ridden to being a city we think of as new, and I think that both of those are really limited and narrow ideas of this city. And I love Oakland, and I think it's so much more than that. And I think that because of the depictions of Oakland that we get, we very rarely get to actually experience ourselves as a validated part of this city, and particularly for the Black people in Oakland.
We're talking with Layla Motley, author of the novel Night Crawling, which was recently chosen for the Oprah Book Club and landed on bestseller charts. Motley's 2018 Oakland Youth Poet Laureate, currently on leave from Smith College while she's launching this incredible writing career. We'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have for Layla, Layla Motley? Have you read Night Crawling? And we'd love to hear from you. The number's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We're KQED Forum, or the email is forum@kqed.org. You know, are there other depictions of Oakland or the Bay Area that really resonate with you as an artist and, you know, feel like they've kind of helped capture the essence of this place?
I mean, I first think of They're There by Tommy Orange, which is one of, you know, a more recent depiction of Oakland in literature and really just does give just such an essence of the city, or at least one part of it. So I love that book. I think it's incredibly important.
And he blurbed your book.
He did blurb my book, yes.
That's amazing, yeah.
It was, yeah, a dream come true. And I mean, I think that, you know, we have people like David Diggs and Boots Riley who are creating these art projects based in and around Oakland. And I think that that's incredibly important to getting, you know, representations of Oakland in Hollywood. I think we have a few, especially more recent depictions of Oakland that really do feel true. But I think we're lacking, especially in Black women's stories.
You know, I mean, Black Oakland, of course, is not a monolith. And how do you see your particular family and your particular, you know, smaller community within this larger framework?
I mean, I think that it's so interesting because so much of my life is has been based around, like, just walking the streets of Oakland. I think a lot of us as, like, young people in Oakland have, you know, walked and taken the bus and taken BART before we ever learned how to drive. And I think I started getting myself home and going places when I was around 10 or 11. And so much of my life has been based around, like, the space between the BART station and my house. And so a lot of my Oakland is around Fruitvale and High Street. And I tried to bring that into this story and I think really show the ways that East Oakland is like this lively and vibrant place, full of people that I think are often sidelined in our ideas of the city. And so, I mean, I think Oakland has so many multitudes too. Every area is going to be a completely different community and a different, way of living, really. And so I just really tried to own in on mine.
So, I mean, you did head out to Smith quite early for college. Now you're taking this leave and you come back to the city. Now that you're back, I mean, do you see Oakland differently now that you've kind of been to the East Coast and seen what is a wildly different world from Oakland?
Absolutely. I mean, I had such culture shock when I went to Smith because it's this rural town in Massachusetts, and you know the biggest city is 3 hours away, and I like would go a day or two or three without seeing any Black people, and it was very strange for me. So I think I definitely had more of an appreciation for Oakland, but also every time you leave, even if it's for like a week or two or three, you know, you go back and something has changed, and I think it's a reality that's really hard to cope with, to love a place that is constantly shifting under your feet.
Do you think that may be the subject of your next book? Loving a place that won't stay put?
I don't know. We'll see.
We're talking with Layla Motley, author of the novel Night Crawling, recently chosen for the Oprah Book Club. Oprah called her a star. The book's also landed on the bestseller charts, and she was the 2018 Oakland Youth Poet Laureate. We'd love to hear from you if you've read Night Crawling. Judging by the response online, a lot of people have. What questions do you have for Layla Motley about this book or about her career? The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or KQED Forum. The email's forum at kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more after this break. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking with Layla Motley. She is the author of Night Crawling, new, very hot book chosen for the Oprah Book Club. Also of note, Layla Motley is 20 years old. I would want to really focus in this segment on the book and introduce your narrator, your main character, Kiara, for us. For people who haven't read the book, like, how would you introduce her?
Absolutely. Kiara is 17 at the beginning of this novel. She's a black girl living in Oakland, California. And she kind of has learned that it's her role to take care of everyone around her. And so it's just her and her older brother, Marcus, living in this studio apartment in East Oakland. And she finds herself involved with a network of Barry police officers who sexually exploit her. And it follows the investigation after that. But also it's really about black girlhood and vulnerability and what we owe to each other. So Kiara is a character that we see, you know, figure out what does it mean to acknowledge herself and to have ownership over her own body. Mm.
And I think you're going to do a little reading for us so people can hear, get a kind of taste of this book. Do you want to go ahead? Is there anything else you want to introduce before you do the reading?
Yeah. So this section is with Kiara and her best friend, Ale, as they're walking the streets of East Oakland. Ale loops her arm around my shoulders and pulls me in, lifting her skateboard into the air and sighing. "Ain't it beautiful?" she shouts into the open air, and I twist my head around to take it all in. The construction still lines the alley, bang-banging wood into more wood, and I swear it's like the city is spiraling around us, skyline popping up a glorious portrait of windows and wheels that don't gotta be as large as they are. Ale's arm around me makes me wanna skip, lift my knees to the sky the way we sway together. Oakland doesn't operate on a grid. We wind here, the streets pulling us closer to the bay, to where salt melts with street and bikes turn to trucks that moan and thrust forward at every light. Then they push us back toward the buildings, where shouts line the perimeter of the sidewalks, and with Ale here, I don't bother trying to decipher what they're saying or who they're saying it to. Just let the noises scatter, like chunks of asphalt out the road. I find my favorite murals, new swirls added to the backgrounds, bordered in tags.
Beautiful ode to Oakland. That was Layla Motley reading from her debut novel, Night Crawling. Layla, we're going to bring in our first caller here, Amy from Oakland. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. I love your book, Layla, and I'm going to be a lifer. I'm going to buy every single book until I die. And I've already told people to read it. I've told people all the way to Texas and back. I mean, I've told everyone, like, what talent you have. I'm a native Texan, but I've lived in Oakland for 25 years, and you just described the city with such finesse. There's so many facets, there's so many different layers, and then your characters have so much compassion and empathy and sensitivity, and then, you know, just when you were reading, you just brought a whole nother layer into it, which is I loved how you brought the bay into the characters almost. Mm-hmm. Like, that's almost a separate character, almost like, I'm getting chills, almost like magical realism, but with a little bit more of a cultural realism. Mm-hmm. And I really, really just think you have so much talent, and I'm so blessed to have read your book, and I hope everyone and the 510-925-415.
And area codes beyond.
916. Yeah. Yes. Read your book because you have something magical. You have a voice that is just beyond. And it reminds me of older, wiser, Pulitzer Prize winning writers. So I'm so excited to see where you go.
Wow. Amy. Thank you so much.
That is quite a first call, Amy. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. That just paying to this work, which, I mean, I'm serious. When I, you know, I was lying there in bed and I was literally just going to read for a few minutes before bed. And I looked up and like hours and hours had passed and I had finished the book. And I was like, wow, that was really amazing. So thank you really, honestly, thank you so much, Amy. And do you just want to respond to maybe the aspect of bringing the Bay in as a character?
I mean, I think that it's such an important locus for us. Anyone who lives in the Bay Area, you know, we see the Bay, we smell the Bay. It is a part of our lives and kind of a part of ourselves. And I wanted to be able to use the Bay and water too in general throughout this book to kind of hold a duality throughout this novel, where that parallels Kiara. And so Kiara, you know, she's experiencing how do you love somebody and also admit that they have harmed you, with her brother and a lot of the men in her lives, mm-hmm. in her life. And then also with the swimming pool, we see, you know, how this pool can be a site of joy and delight, and also literally filled with feces. And
this is the swimming pool at the apartment building where Kiara lives.
And then with the Bay too, like how this can be just a calming and constant in Kiara's life, but also, you know, recognizing how at one point she's watching the Bay and she's thinking about how, you know, so many girls have been trafficked in boats going across the Bay.
Yeah.
So I wanted to hold two things at once with that.
So, you know, as an Oakland person reading this book, I immediately thought of the really huge case of the exploitation of a young woman that came to light in 2016 by not just Oakland police, but police officers and sheriffs across the region. But this isn't like a carbon copy or a straight fictionalization of that outrage, right? I mean, this is its own story.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, I think many of us in the Bay Area watched that case as it came out in 2016, and it kind of consumed our media for a while. And I remember being a young teenager at the time and really recognizing like how this was a reflection of the things I already knew about living in the world, in my body, and the ways in which, you know, girls of color are just not protected, and watching kind of the media response and many people's focus on the police officer in the police department and not on the systemic harm to girls of color really struck me. And so years later, when I was thinking of writing this novel and coming up with Kiara as a character, I knew I wanted to tackle police sexual violence, but really through the lens of Kiara, who is entirely fictional. And I wanted to like take a headline and build it into a story of a person and what happens when we remove politics from theory and place it into people.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, at its heart, it really is this book about intersectional oppression and the ways that a poor black girl has so many different forces sort of bearing down on her. And the action that really begins it, right, is having to pay the rent.
Yeah.
This simple thing. And that drives all of this. Mm-hmm. It reveals her precarity.
Right, it does. And I think that part of what I wanted to do is start with this rent increase that happens in their apartment complex, which they've been in for decades, because I think it's so important that we recognize how the catalyst of mass displacement moves so many of us in directions that we might not have otherwise gone in when we're faced with losing our homes. And so we see Kiara kind of enter this survival mindset and work to pay her rent in any way that she can.
Yeah. Let's bring in Heidi from the South Bay. Welcome, Heidi.
Hi.
Hey, you're on. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Yeah. So, Lila, I just want to say I haven't read your book, and I just turned on a few minutes ago, but I deeply appreciate your love and passion for Oakland, and it resonates very strongly with me. I grew up in Berkeley in the 60s and early 70s and went to Berkeley High, was extremely proud when Berkeley was the first city in the country to initiate cross-city busing, so everyone had to experience the feeling of leaving their own immediate community, and even more so, with great pride, how all segments of Oakland and Berkeley, no matter what race, religion, gender, socioeconomic society, came together to fight against the common causes of racism, the war in Vietnam, poverty, exclusionary housing. So those were fantastic times. And my heart is also grieving is what is happening in the extraordinary community of Oakland and Berkeley and driving out people who've been there for generations. So thank you. And thank you so much for spreading your word and your feelings through literature. You're an extraordinary young woman.
Thank you, Heidi. Appreciate that. And you know what I wonder, Layla, do you feel the Bay's communities uniting around the Bay's problems? Is that not the way that you experience your own generation now? I'm just curious.
I mean, I think it really depends. I think we have. But it's often really hard to feel united in a world that lives mostly on the internet at this point. But I definitely think that there are especially like a lot of youth organizers who have been really leading so many of our, you know, Bay Area movements. And I mean, I'm thinking of the movement to get police out of schools, and so much of the 2020 uprisings youth had a huge part in. So I definitely think that, you know, this is a city where organizing and that kind of like constant revolutionary tradition is always at play, whether we see it or not.
Yeah. Solidarity at least feels possible at times, which I'm not sure everyone across the country feels that way. We're talking with Layla Motley, author of the novel Night Crawling, recently chosen for the Oprah Book Club. It's on bestseller charts now. She was the 2018 Oakland Youth Poet Laureate. And we want to hear from you. What questions do you have for Layla Motley? Have you read Night Crawling? And, you know, as we've been talking about here, a theme of the book is how adult standards end up placed on young black teenage girls. Is that something you've experienced? You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, it's KQED Forum. You can email your questions to forum@kqed.org. You know, I wanted you to talk about another aspect of this book, which is that the kind of queerness of this book, the relationships between queer characters are really the ones that hold up through all these difficult times.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what I wanted to do is allow the characters to exist queer without it being the central focus of the novel. I think especially in the Bay, that's a reality that many young people get to have, where queerness can be secondary. That I think in a lot of other places in this country is just not possible. And so we see kind of the characters navigate this in a very subtle way throughout the novel. And it was really important to me that we recognize that Kiara is in kind of this survival mindset, and she has love and connections and people who she deeply cares about, and also romance isn't necessarily the first thing on her mind. And I think that that really we get to experience her and her internal world as the most core element of this novel, and everything else is kind of a side plot, which I don't think we often get to see for teenagers.
That's so interesting. You know, there's also really only one depiction of whiteness, really. I guess a couple. There's some white police, and then there's Marsha, who ends up being her lawyer, representing her as she's trying to get some sense of justice from this, after this exploitation that she's experienced. You know, how did you create that character? How did you, you know, what should we make of her?
I mean, I wanted to turn the trope of the white savior on its head by really creating this character, Marsha, who's a lawyer. And I think often, especially in criminal justice spaces, there's this idea that saving is possible through this system. But really, Marsha is the only person who believes that she is doing any saving. And I think that it's really important to recognize that the white savior is often only in the heads of that one person. And so we see Marsha, you know, she develop some sort of trust with Kiara, but she is never going to be the person to get Kiara out of the situation she's in. And really, we recognize that Marcia doesn't understand where Kiara is or her position or what it means to be attempting to survive this and to thrive. And that at the end of the day, Marcia is going to go home to her lush apartment and Kiara is going to, you know, be in the same position that she was before.
At the same time, she does provide some material support, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be one, you know, she gets her food. And
yeah.
Presumably, what I imagine happens after this book is that they win some, you know, financial reward, at least for what's happened here.
Maybe not. I mean, part of what we see is that Marcia supports Kiara as long as Kiara serves her back in the way that she is asking. And so as long as Kiara is cooperating, then Marcia will provide that material support. Mm-hmm. But that's conditional. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's so often the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the feels to me like maybe the real moral center of this book is Trevor, who's the kid next door. Mm-hmm. His mother abandoned him during the course of the book and who Kiara really takes care of. And, you know, I was talking with our producer, Grace Wan, and we both find ourselves continuing to think about mm-hmm. that character and hoping he's okay.
Mm-hmm. No, everyone loves Trevor. I love Trevor. I mean, I think he allows us to continually see that each of these characters are children, that they are mm-hmm. that they are young, and Kiara gets to kind of experience these glimpses of childhood through Trevor. But Kiara has, you know, been put in a position where she's caring for everyone around her, and Trevor is another person that she takes on the care for. And she, in some ways, thinks that she can remother him, but she doesn't have the resources to do that. She is still a kid, and I think, especially when we're talking about a child welfare system that is not necessarily going to support this relationship or their individual or collective survival or hope or well-being, we end up in a position where we know it's almost inevitable that these two cannot continue to survive together.
Mm-hmm. One listener writes in to say, I read that Layla creates journals for her characters. Does she do that for all the characters or just for the main character in this book?
I just do it for my main character because I do write in first person. And mm-hmm. so it's really important to me that I get inside of Kiara's head and that I immerse myself in her and that I see every other character through her lens because she's not introduced to them as, you know, objective people or characters. She is introduced to them through only her own point of view. And so when I think about the other characters, I try to always put it in Kiara's perspective.
And, you know, when you came to the end of this book, did you imagine that maybe, like, how did you imagine their trajectories extending beyond mm-hmm. the covers?
I mean, I wanted there to be an arc in this book that we might not have expected when we began. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if we thought this was going to be a crime thriller or courtroom drama, that we end mm-hmm. up really realizing that that is the least important part of this novel. And that the trajectory and the arc of Kiara's internal world is really where we see the change. And so, you know, in the beginning of this book, Kiara is very much trapped. She feels she has no options, and by the end of this book there is at least possibility, even if we don't know what that is.
Yeah. We're talking with Layla Motley. She's written this great new book, Night Crawling. She's 20 years old. The book was recently chosen for the Oprah Book Club. It's already on bestseller lists. Was the 2018 Oakland Youth Poet Laureate, currently on leave from Smith College. When we get back, we're going to talk some more with Layla Motley and take some more of your calls and comments. I'm Alexis Madrigal. This is Forum. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking with Layla Motley, author of the new novel Nightcrawling, an Oprah Book Club pick, and a bestseller. You know, you said in one interview that you've kind of always been doing things at warp speed. And I wonder what you're thinking about next. I mean, you've probably had this book wrapped for a year or more. So what are you hoping to write or do or make next?
Well, I have a poetry collection coming out in the next year or so. So that'll be one thing, kind of returning to poetry. And then I'm currently working on another novel. I don't know. I'm trying to slow down a little bit. I think that...
that doesn't sound like it, Layla.
I'm trying to do it a little bit slower. So yeah, I've had this book finished for 3 years. And you know, I'm trying to see it out into the world. I mean, I haven't even gotten to go and see it in a bookstore in Oakland yet. So I'm hoping to get to watch it really just thrive and exist beyond me. And then I'm always writing. I can't help myself.
Yeah. I also know you have a favorite bookstore in Oakland. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I have a couple. But I love Marcus Books, which is like the first Black-owned bookstore in the country, I think the longest one. And it is an incredible bookstore. I mean, I love Pegasus and Walden Pond, Spectator. There are just so many incredible bookstores in Oakland. And there are some that, you know, used to exist and don't anymore. But I think that I'm still proud to like be in a city where I have multiple options of places to buy the book. And, you know, we've even seen that on the indie list. The Northern California bookstores have been selling this book like crazy. So I'm so grateful for everyone going to their indie bookstore and buying it.
I mean, they better have this book out on the table, you know, full end cap.
I'll let you know.
Yes, good. Let's bring in Marcia from San Francisco. Welcome, Marcia.
Hey, good morning. Good
morning.
First of all, bravo. I actually listened to the book as an audiobook that I downloaded from the public library. So a shout out to the public library.
Yes.
Although I hope that you sell thousands and millions of copies because I think it's an extraordinary novel. I loved it. I spent 30 years living right off High Street and Fruitvale Avenue area, so it felt like a delicious meal as I read it, just so familiar. And I thought you captured the essence of everything that's going on in Oakland in terms of gentrification and change. My question is, I'm just curious. You know, the novel left me feeling incredibly enraged about, you know, just the social justice issue of police negativity and harm to so many individuals. And, you know, time after time after time, we're left with very few options. And I'm just wondering, you know, what your comments are about that. I mean, we know this was a fictionalized story, but not really. Do you know what I mean? So I'm just curious your thoughts about that.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think when we're talking about police violence, I mean, we've been having these discussions for decades. And I think many people who weren't having that conversation have recently started to engage with it. And I think that, you know, we see with the 2015 uprisings and the 2020 uprisings that there are so many organizations who are working towards, you know, trying to combat police violence. And so many of these organizations are founded by and organized by Black women attempting to center other Black women. And I think what ends up happening often is that those movements get kind of co-opted and shifted towards this lack of focus on Black women and this neglect of Black women's precarity. And so I really wanted to write a novel that recognizes that and that doesn't look to the criminal justice system for hope, because it is a system that has never provided it. And so I knew going in that, you know, we might be upset by the way that this ends, but this is the truth. And that, you know, if we want things to look different, we have to step into the kind of fear that I think so many of us have around what would it look like to exist without systems that we have never lived without. So I think that so much of it is being able to engage and think about, you know, what would it mean to not have a system of policing? What would it mean to not look to the justice system for any kind of hope or justice?
What would it mean? You know, I think people people do have a very difficult time imagining that, I think. Yeah. Let's bring in Sam from Oakland, who has a kind of different kind of question for you.
Hello?
Hey, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Sam from Oakland. I haven't gotten your book, but I definitely am going to get it today, if I could still find it on the bookshelf. You know, a phenomenal person like you doesn't get to be the way you are without a lot of input from parents, and I'm a parent, and I just want to know how you look at your family and your parents and your caregivers, and just sort of how you frame the way they raised you and what were the most important aspects of those influences.
I mean, I definitely, I remember we had this bookshelf in our apartment growing up, and it had like, it had a few books that I remember I read from a very young age, like maybe 8 or 9. And some of them were poetry books and some of them were novels. And they really did reflect me. And I think that a huge part of me figuring out that like it was even an option to be a writer was being able to see writers who wrote like me, and who weren't necessarily part of what we think of as the literary canon. And I think that like I often just didn't enjoy those kinds of books. And I think that having access to that in my home was really important. Having access to the library, we went to the library like I think at least once a week growing up. And I think that that kind of thing is incredibly important. And I was never discouraged from writing or creativity or anything really. I was given a lot of freedom. And I also think that a lot of it is, you know, I just had kind of an innate drive towards writing and towards creativity, and I was very independent. And so a lot of how I got here was just, you know, I wanted it really badly, and I worked for it. And I think we often don't give young people credit, and look to parents when sometimes it's not about the parents or the caregivers or the way we're raised. Sometimes it is something in us and something in the way that we're able to look at the world and look at ourselves.
Well, I hear you even have 2 unpublished books that you had previously written before this one, which you started at 17.
Yeah, I wrote my first novel at 14 and my second at 15. And then this, my third, I started, I think, a month before I turned 17 and then finished in my first 2 months of 17.
Dang. So you wrote it in 3 months? Is that what I maybe?
Yeah,
I did
about 2.5, 3 months. Yeah.
Oh, my God. What was the process then? But, you know, obviously then it goes off to book editor. Did that drag out, or were you just blowing through the edits also?
Oh, no. That took like a year, I think, from first round of revision to last. That's definitely a lot more of a process, but I try to draft my first draft really quickly, mostly because I try not to leave my main character. I think it's really important for me, especially because I write in first person, that I really live it with her as I'm writing. And so I wrote the first draft in 2.5 months, and then I think I sold it about a year later.
Got it. You know, you didn't grow up in the kind of circumstances precisely that that Kiara does. I mean, very different in experience. Mm-hmm. That this, you know, poverty, obviously there are some similarities. But what kind of research did you do to make sure that you were capturing this other kind of experience?
I mean, I think that I definitely pulled on some of my experiences, definitely people that I knew and loved. And I did research when I needed to. I think research is really important for all writers, because we are trying to create this authentic world and allow the reader to really forget that it's fiction. And so a lot of what I did was researching, you know, even just like very small things. things, logistics. Like there were a lot of things that I researched, and there were a lot of things that I kind of just knew, whether from experience or I don't know, just picking it up in the world. And I think that I knew that one thing that I couldn't do was really know all of the ins and outs of sex work. So I made sure that we had a sex worker read the book and provide notes, because it was really important to me that I at least got those logistics right. I think that there's a lot of misinformation around sex work and just like so many different experiences of it. There are even just so many different types of sex work. So it was really important to me that we had a sex worker read it and provide that kind of feedback so that I could think about my character and also about like the many realities of sex work and find the way that those two things met.
Yeah. A couple more notes of praise coming in. Marilee writes, I'm so proud of this guest. I'm a native Oaklander, but grew up on the peninsula. I've now lived here since 1977. You give me so much hope. Keep it up. Robin tweets, Layla, shout out to a Park Day School alumna. I remember you in kindergarten. Rise, Layla, rise. You're on your way. So proud of you. Love, Sarah's mom. assuming you know who Sarah is. One of the things that I wanted to ask about is, you know, the kind of support and success that you are already receiving as a writer is kind of a lot different from what a lot of your peers obviously are getting. And I know that one of your earlier projects was editing Quip, right? This was an anthology of young queer writing. So I wonder who inspires you these days among your peers, and how do you feel like you now need to use this platform you have to support them?
I mean, I think that there are like just so many young artists who are incredible. And I think that part of what our culture doesn't do is support young artists and recognize us as like important with important work. I think that a lot of what happens is when we exit kind of adolescence, we put this huge distance between ourselves and our younger selves, and kind of approach it with judgment. And I think that that often translates to how we treat young people, with the same kind of judgment that we might think of our younger selves. But I think that part of what makes young people so brilliant is we kind of have this heightened experience and emotions and all of this like fever to create and to share whatever it is that we're passionate about that hasn't yet been kind of taken out of us by all of the ways that our culture injects the idea that practicality is the most important thing. So I definitely think that as a culture, we need to look towards young people more. And I have so many friends and who are really incredible artists and who, you know, might not have published books or albums or whatever it is, but who are creating incredible work.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, a lot of our listeners really are like, there's a lot of kinds of comments. I'm just going to class them into two things. One is, how do I make sure my kid turns out like you? and, you know, what is this sort of network of influences that, you know, made you, you know, so that people could try and, like, put that into play?
So interesting.
It's really interesting. I just want to say to all the parents out there, I'm pretty sure Layla is sweet generous. Like, you're not, you can't make someone write three novels before they turn 17. That's just not something you can actually, have a kid do without it.
Yeah, and you don't want to make your kid anything that they're not, you know? Yeah, I think that part of raising a child is allowing them the space and encouragement to do whatever they want. And if that's like lay on the couch and watch TV all day, then like that's great. Teaching them rest is important. You know, like I think that we have
my kids are so glad to hear this, Layla. My kids are going to replay this for me this
afternoon. We have all of these ideas that like the thing that makes people valuable is the things that they do and this kind of idea of exceptionality. And I don't think that helps anyone, you know? So I think that I learned that it was important for me to overachieve in order to be valuable. And I think that that was a lesson that I wish that I hadn't learned, and maybe I would have rested more and experienced more of like being a kid. And I think that it's important for parents to allow their children to just be kids and not push them towards, you know, things that they maybe don't want to do or aren't ready for, or the idea that they need to be doing something in order to be loved and important.
What a great answer. Robin in San Francisco teaches in Berkeley. Last call here. Hey, Robin. Can you
hear me? Hey there, Alexis.
Hey.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yep, sure can. Go ahead.
Great. Hey, Alexis. Thanks for taking my call. Layla, so great to hear from you, and I can't wait to head over to Pegasus today to get my Nightcrawling book. It's going to be great to read. My questions to you just stem from my work as a public school teacher in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. As a teacher, you know, at Thousand Oaks, we try to always raise equity, social justice issues, tolerance, and raise up all students' voices. And a couple of years ago, I did a summer book club in the middle of COVID and read with my students the book by Rita Williams Garcia, One Crazy Summer, which is, you may have read, was a story of the Black experience for young people in 1968. So my question really stems, as I work to elevate my own students' love of literature, what books were, I know you mentioned you had a bookshelf in your home, what mm-hmm. books were really instrumental in yeah. Your own development as a lover of literature?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Let me see. Okay. I love Intozaki Shange. She's one of the first poets I loved. And her, I mean, she's most well known for Colored Girls, which is her play. But I also really loved her novel, which is called Sassafras, Cypress, and Indigo. And it's about like Black girlhood and art. And it's beautiful. Salvage the Bones by Jasmine Ward was definitely one of my favorite novels. I think I found it when I was around 15 and just fell in love with it. I mean, I think that it's so important that you lean into the interests of young people. You know, I wanted to read about like Black girlhood and art. And so a lot of the books that I read were around that. And those are the books that have stuck with me. And really allowing like people to find literature that they love and like not putting judgment on it. You know, I think that it's definitely like it's worth allowing kids to love their YA and love their middle grade. And, you know, if they like picture books, that's great. And if they want to read about robots, that's fantastic. Like whatever it is to be able to read a book and feel that kind of a neat like love and excitement around reading is really the thing that we want to teach young people, because once you experience that, it drives you forward to read more and more and more, and as you develop, you'll read different kinds of books, and I think that it's so important to just find like that first book that you're gonna love, and that's a very individual thing.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Layla Motley, author of the novel Nightcrawling, Oprah Book Club pick, also a forum pick, let's just call it that too. It's a bestseller. Thank you so much. We're so lucky to have you in our region. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.